And now, another controvertible episode of
Faded Mates. Welcome, everybody. We're going to be talking about space romances. Ooh. I'm Jen Reed's Romance.
I'm Sarah McLean. I write romance novels and I read romance novels. And all I want is for, like, a Pigs in Space style intro to this, where it's like, romance in space.
Oh, God, me too. Miss Piggy was formative.
Man, Pigs in Space was the best. Also, the, like, I forget what it was called, but the, like, the General Hospital-style soap opera on The Muppet Show. We're super dating ourselves now. I'd like everyone to appreciate.
I don't even care, because it's amazing. She just, everything was so sparkly and silvery when she was in space. I loved it.
I know. I know. And it's making me want, like, I wonder if The Muppet Show's on Netflix. The Muppet Show should be on something. I would love to show my daughter The Muppet Show.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's somewhere. I remember going through that when our son was younger and really being like, we got to watch The Muppet Show, man. It's good
times. Well, because also, like, as a grown-up, you come to Sesame Street with your kids, and then you realize, like, all the good Muppets are not on Sesame Street. Like, yeah. The good, like, smart-ass Muppets. Miss Piggy, sure. Gonzo, like, Fozzie Bear. Like, none of them are on Sesame Street.
One of my favorite Muppet movies is the one with Gonzo being from space. God, what was that one? Hold on. Muppet movie.
I don't know, but I do feel like this is giving Eric some meat food.
there was a movie that was all about Gonzo, and you know who else it had? Okay. The guy from The Good Wife and, like, Dead Poets Society that, like, oh, makes me bite my fist because he's so fucking handsome.
Are you talking about Robert Sean Leonard?
No, I'm not. I'm not talking about the fuck that guy. I'm talking about the other guy. You know, the one who was on The Good Wife.
Ethan Hawke?
No, I'm talking about the other guy. God.
How many other guys are there in Dead Poets Society?
Shut up, the best guy. The one who makes out with her in the elevator.
You keep saying The Good Wife. It's not going to make me have seen it.
Hold on. I'm like, oh my Google's God. My friend.
Oh, you guys, welcome to my life.
No, stop it. I'm an amazing person. Just because I can't remember people's names.
Dead Poets Society is like a seminal text for me. Like it's so it, I'm,
oh, for
I'm
sure.
confused by which guy or which boy you're talking about.
Okay, wait. I'm trying to find out. So Alicia,
you're not
Fork
talking about, like, the one with, like,
Will Gardner. Okay, so Will Gardner is the name of the guy in The Good Wife. And I'm like, you know,
Will Gardner is
Knox Overstreet. He's the guy who plays Knox Overstreet.
Oh, wait a second. He's not good. He's a bad guy on in a lot of things.
Okay, but in this Muppet movie with Gonzo, he also is fine. I'm just telling you.
Well, he's fine everywhere.
Yeah, well, God, yes. Oh, my God. There's a scene with him kissing Alicia Florrick in a fucking
Knox
elevator.
Overstreet. You're right. And that
Knox
scene where he's the one who goes on the date in Dead Poets Society.
Yes.
And then what does he do? It's Josh Charles.
Josh Charles.
Night. It's from Sports Night.
You know, I'm starting to realize that you and I not remembering names and titles is, like, way deeper.
Wait.
There's, like, a lot of layers to
it. I know, you guys. So I know my faves are problematic, but I have, like, an obsession with Aaron Sorkin and the things that he writes. And Sports Night is magnificent. And you have to appreciate that me saying that Sports Night is magnificent is, like, really, it must be super magnificent because I know nothing about anything involving balls. I mean, blow up balls. Although, wait. I mean, throw ball, kick ball.
Sports balls. Sports balls, Sarah.
Sports balls. Although I will say that I was at a signing not long ago and a woman came up to me. A reader came up to me, and if you listen, reader, please, like, tell us who you are. Please say hi on Twitter or Facebook or somewhere. She came up to me, and she said, do you know the difference between you and Tessa Dare? And I was like, well, I mean, we're not the same person. So I know a lot of things that are different about me and Tessa Dare. And she said, Tessa Dare writes about balls and you don't. And I was like, what? Oh. And I realized I really don't. Like, I generally don't, like, involve myself with testicles. But apparently Tessa does, everyone. So, you know, if you've never read Tessa Dare and you're into balls, she's for you.
Talk about a close fucking read. I mean, damn, girl. Wow. I'm impressed.
But I did come home and I put balls into that book. Because I was like, well, I refuse to be bested. I don't know.
Well, Sarah, all this to circle back around to, I'm real embarrassed to tell you the name of this fucking movie that you should watch with your daughter is called Muppets from Space. Like, it's not even complicated. How the fuck did I not think of that? Muppets from Space. Wait, Jesus Christ.
Amazing. Oh. And is it Pigs in Space, but like a whole movie?
It's like a whole movie. Miss Piggy's for sure in it.
It's like the Wayne's World of the Muppet universe.
They're trying to figure out where Gonzo's from, if I remember correctly, but it's really fucking cute. It's like one of my favorites. It's like really, really cute. So I would recommend it. I feel like, now, it almost feels dirty to somehow segue to romance from there, but you know, whatever.
Whatever. Romance in space. And here's the interesting thing. It's real dirty in space. I feel like romance off planet, it's like suddenly everybody's allowed to write whatever the hell they want.
We've talked about this with like paranormal, right? Like when you remove people from like human society on Earth, you get to break a bunch of different rules. Like that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's sort of, it actually really does. It's interesting because when we talked about doing this episode, my instant thought was like, oh, well, we have to talk about those early ones. But like, I don't think there were that many super early romances, but there was a Jane Anne Krentz called Sweet Starfire. The cover's pretty great. Like the heroine has like the most perfect, like they're basically just like metallic boobs underneath there. They're like weaponry.
they're very, it's not even perky. It's like they defy gravity.
They're very firm. No gravity. They're incredibly firm breasts. and it's based, so the heroine has telepathy. She's telepathic. And she is, she's not telepathic, but she's from this like world of people who are telepathic and she doesn't have it. Ooh. There's like some reason why she doesn't have it and she has to figure it out. And then the hero is basically Han Solo. Like he's like a delivery man in space.
My theory, and I will get to this later in the show, is that like every good character I love in a space romance is basically Han Solo.
I mean, it makes sense though, right? Especially because, so I don't know what date this is, but it had to have been early days. I do know what date the other one is. The other one was written in the, so the other one that sort of is instantly imprinted on my mind is Joanna Lindsay's Warrior's Woman, which is in the Lysander series. Which is spelled Lysander, because I don't know, dash.
That's how you show that you're an alien culture, by having some real weird spelling fucking definite. Like, right? You gotta use a bunch of punctuation.
Add in punctuation to make it seem real. So wait, but I am going to, I know last episode I was like, we're not going to read the back cover copy because it sucks. But like, here's the thing. Back cover copy has changed a lot over the years because if I had back cover copy like this, I would make everyone read it all the time. So here it is. In the year 2139, fearless Tedra Dayar sets out to rescue her beleaguered planet Christrin from the savage rule of the evil Crad Kamor. Experienced in combat, but not in love, the beautiful, untouched Amazon flies with Martha, her wisecracking, free-thinking computer to a world where warriors reign supreme and into the arms of the one man she can never hope to vanquish, the bronzed barbarian, Callan Lysander, a magnificent creature of raw yet disciplined desires, the muscle-bound primitive succeeds where no puny Kistran male had before, igniting a raging fire within Tedra that must be extinguished before she can even think of saving her enslaved world.
That's a whole lot.
We're gonna read it, y'all.
I'm like kind of ready to read it right now.
So it's dang. Like this is Conan the Barbarian, I think.
Oh yeah, sure.
Fanfic. And then there's the, you know, and it makes sense, like
yeah,
where Joanna Lindsay was like a earthy, you know, Schwarzeneggery kind of lady, Jane Ann Krentz is more of like an intellectual you
Han
know
Solo type of snark guy. Yeah, right
exactly.
Like, we should, I swear to God, I always say this, but now it's summer, so maybe I'm constantly like, we should be making BuzzFeed quizzes that go along with this, like
no.
Which 70s or 80s space hero did you imprint on?
So anyway, that is where, so there were, space romance is not new. There were definitely, I mean, like, these are huge writers. Like, these are the big names yeah. of the 80s writing these space romances, 80s and 90s. And so certainly there was, they appeared here and there, but there are more of them now. And there yeah. are more that are sort of well known and respected and, you know, real fucking entertaining, frankly.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, that's, I think, what it is, too. Like, I just feel like, so here's the, like, a little secret about me as a reader, which is, oh, are you okay?
I was just going to say,
yeah.
Warrior's Woman was published in 1990.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I am more of a sci-fi person than a fantasy person, just in general, right? Like when I like Back to the Future and movies I loved about space travel and aliens and Star Wars, like right, like Star Trek, like all of that is way more my jam. And so one of the things about like space romances is I feel like there's world building, but it's like less maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, fantasy, I am not a good enough reader. Like, I'm going to mm-hmm. own that, right? Like, I'm just like, oh, shit, who's this guy again? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like somehow fantasy, it requires more of me as a reader in a way that I'm like, oh, I'm not good at this. So I think it's that imprinting thing. Like, when I think about the, like, you know, the like Star Wars, Back to the Future, Star Trek, like that whole decade where I was like growing up and just like, I couldn't get enough of it. So mm-hmm. part of me is like, of course I love these space romances. They're amazing. It's like if Han, I mean, all we ever get from Han Solo and Princess Leia is that one fucking kiss or whatever, right? We deserve more. We deserve better. We deserve space threesomes.
Yeah. Oh. We deserve sex planets, so yeah. Let's just make it so.
Make it so. Sir? Do it.
Okay, so we're in a golden age, I would say.
Yes!
Of
I
space
love
romance.
It.
Well, wait, where should we start? Should we just start? Should we start with, like, the series that, like...
brought us together?
Oh, well, we should start... Everyone thinks that it was IAD, but it wasn't I mean, like, Jen and I knew each other through the IAD, you know, universe.
But our real bonding happened.
Yeah, but our real bonding came over Grace Goodwin.
The Interstellar Bride series.
I'm so embarrassed by this whole episode.
No, I'm not. They're fucking awesome. You know
they
what?
Are.
I was on a family vacation where there were, like, more people than seats in cars. And so somehow I kept always getting left behind, which I swear didn't mean to happen, but it was like, get the kids and the grandparents there. And I was like, whatever, you're going to a kids movie, it's fine. And I read a ton of these fucking books, you guys, like one after the other. I literally could not get enough of them.
What's the series name?
The Interstellar Bride series. Yeah.
Oh my God. So you guys. Okay. So Jen, picture this. Let me paint you a picture. So Jen and I are not friends yet. I mean, like, we're friendly. We like each other on Twitter. We follow each other on Twitter. But I don't know how it fucking happened. I think it probably happened because Ice Planet Barbarians. So Sophie Jordan, who is joining us next week for The Master, is a dear friend of mine. And she loves a Bananas book just like more than anybody in the whole world. And she started reading those Ice Planet Barbarians books by Ruby Dixon. And we like found ourselves down the rabbit hole, the two of us. And it was, you know, I looked up a week later and I'd read like 17 of those Blue Alien books. It's the whole week is a blur. And I would recommend like the first, you know, however many you want to read.
Yeah, until you're ready. Yeah.
At some point, you'll just overdose on them. And then you'll just be like, okay, I'm done with these Blue Alien books.
It's like when you're at a bar and you're drinking, like, it's like the first real night nice of summer. And you're drinking, like, maybe some kind of frozen cocktail. They're going down real easy. And then all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, I just overdid it.
Exactly. I imagine it's what, like, I've never done cocaine, but I imagine it's like Coke. Like, you're like, this is great. And then you're like, whoa, I need a nap.
Right? So, yeah, that was it. So we had to shift from that to another similar series,
so,
right?
So, like, then we started, like, so then it was just one of those things where, like, anytime anybody asked, like, what's the craziest thing you've read recently, we'd be like, well, have you read Ice Planet Barbarians? Because there's, like, it's weird. I mean, like, spaceship crashes, like, woman out in this, like, ice planet. She stumbles upon a, like, giant blue alien, and he immediately goes down on her. Like, and it's crazy. So, whatever. Periodically, the Ice Planet Barbarians comes up online, and, like, we talk about how crazy it is. And then Jen DMs me, I think, have you read these Grace Goodwin books? And I was like, well, no, but obviously I'm in the mood for another drug. So the structure of these books are, first of all, these are not in KU. Ice Planet Barbarians are in KU, so you sort of feel like it's free.
Sure,
Grace
right.
Goodwin has put her books.
You're paying for it.
You are paying $3.99 for each one of these books. And I mean, like, I'm not going to lie. I gave that money to her for a long time. These are probably not in your library either, you guys. Like, so the premise is, so you, the first chapter, you're like, hello, here's the heroine having sex with, like, two men or, like, one, like, there's all different, it's whatever it is. It's like, there are
aliens,
4,000
right?
books in this series. And the first one, all you know is that, like, she's having sex. Like, she's, like, in the middle of sex with this person. And you're like, this feels like a very jarring entry into a book. But okay, Jen recommended it, so. And then she wakes up and you realize that she has been in a machine, like, in a sort of, you know.
An MRI sex machine.
An MRI sex machine.
Sarah. That's what it is. Hello. Instead of it being a big donut, it's like a big vagina.
And then she wakes up and there's a doctor and the doctor's like, oh, hey, you've been matched to an interstellar, like a man, a male of a species on another planet, and you are a human. You're basically like a virgin, like a fertile human female, and you can be
right.
Like, you're basically going to be shipped off to this dude wherever you are.
Well, and it's always this
and
alien
sex compatibility.
Yeah, and the deal is that at least for the ones I've read, this like interstellar bride program, right? The alien planet, they have like pairs of alien men essentially agree to mate this woman, or that's how it works on their planet, because it's so dangerous that way like, if one of them dies, the other one will be able to, like, you know,
protect her
and still be there for her. Now, none of them ever die, so it's just like these polyamorous, like, sexy, super sexy threesomes.
But I will say, male, female, male. There's no crossing of the swords in these books, which is a big bummer for me.
Yeah, I think that's why you and I both were like, meh. Here's my other thing is the woman on Earth who's like part of the intake process, her name is Warden Agara. And as time went on in these books, it became clear that she had some sort of backstory herself. And I was like, it's like a year later. Has she ever gotten her own book? And I do not think so. But I bet we cannot be the only people who are like, Warden Agara, where is your
book? Why doesn't she get herself into the machine?
Well, I think she had a mate and something went wrong. And so now she's like back in the pool and, you know, not ready.
Sure.
Fine.
Take your time, Agara. But here's what's really interesting, because these really echo. So I'm really fascinated by these space books because I think they're doing some sort of like interesting work. Like, as part of the genre. I mean, this is welcome to Fate Mates, everyone. Like, we're going to talk about, we're going to try and figure out, like, why these.
What it's doing,
books
right?
That at first glance feel like real one handed reads, if you know what I mean. Like, like, I think doing some interesting work. And what these books are doing is very similar to what old medievals were doing, in that they're telling a story about, like, each one of these meetings in these Grace Goodwin books is intergalactic because intermarriage between the two cultures solidifies the relationship between the two cultures.
Right, the two planets. Right?
It's like your Norman female is sold to a Saxon warrior, or vice versa. I don't remember my history. So I think that's
whatever.
How it goes. That's interesting. Like, there's something going on there. But also then there's this very real sense of, like, woman alone in a world, in a threatening world.
Yeah, sure.
And there's something really compelling about that in 2019 for me. Like,
oh yeah,
I've been talking a lot about, you and I have been talking really a ton about how it feels like now in 2019, you have two options in romance. You have, like, the super soft, like the, like, really gentle, calm love story, or you have, like, space prison planet book.
Yeah,
which
right.
We're gonna get to, right?
Yeah. And like, I think that's true, right?
The two, I feel like they're scratching. Weirdly, I feel like they're scratching the same itch, like socially, because I don't want. I'm right now, like, not really that interested in a soft book because I'm like, I want to see, like, I want to see threat. I want to see anger. I want to see, like, women and, like, people in marginalized communities triumphing over, you know, the worst. But right. I think a lot of people are like, the world is horrible, and I just want to escape into my, like, soft cinnamon roll of a book.
And I think that there are, like, then two sides of the, like, the same coin, which is how, when we think about, like, what is romance, how does romance approach, like, the patriarchy? And I think one of the things we've talked a lot about is, like, we're excited about the way that it, you know, like, I was reading a really interesting thread this morning that was like, when we talk about romance being by women for women, that used to be true, but now it's also really trying, I think, at least the books I'm interested in, like, trying to be a place for anyone who's, like, on the downside of the gender spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. Anyone who's, like, not a cishet male. And so therefore, like, opening up for non-binary, for queer people, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that these books are really, like, pushing against sometimes too, like, gender dynamics, because one of the big differences I think of in these books is that the people who are, like, women aren't always just like receptacles or receivers, right? Like, so sometimes they're fighting back. Sometimes they're the heroine. Sometimes they're saving their mates. Sometimes, right? So, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of ways in which it's, you put people in space, and then sometimes, like, their roles, right? Whether they be gender roles or, like, work-related roles or, like, marriage roles, right? kind of get a chance to change because now you're in a different society. So I do think that that's like what it is too. So it's like exploring, like, who are we in relationship to this institution, maybe, mm-hmm. right? Whether it be the prison planet, the mating, the inner bride program, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's something really interesting to be said for just like how these books are. It's weird because almost all of them sort of really like solidify in some ways, like underscore that kind of physical difference between like the sort of like women as the weaker sex. Right?
Well, because the aliens are always 7 feet tall with like a monster dick. Yeah, right.
But even in, so let's talk about Emmy Chandler next.
Okay.
So if you follow me on Twitter, you know that I about 3 weeks ago went through this like massive Emmy Chandler phase where like somebody I was on retreat with a bunch of other authors. Somebody recommended, like, we were talking about, I was with Sophie Jordan. Sophie loves a prison book. We were talking about these Prison Planet books. And now I can't remember the name of that series either. Anyway, so we were, so, and I had never read them. So I picked up the first of the Emmy Chandler Prison Planet books. The first one is called Guardian. Oh, it's just called Prison Planet, the series. And so the concept is like people get shipped off from planet, from like, again, it's kind of a Star Trek-y kind of futuristic society where there are many different planets that are in part of like some sort of planetary consortium. And if you commit a crime, you are sent to this prison planet where
it's Australia.
Where there are sectors and you go to a different, like each sector has a different kind of criminal in it. And obviously, and women are men, and women and men are sent to all the sectors. And like, it's a very intense content warning on this. Like, there's a lot of threat of sexual violence in this book.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously, like, when you are in a position where like women and men are imprisoned in a enclosed space, no matter how big the enclosed space, like, that sexual dynamic is that dynamic of sex is going to be there between them. And it's it is overarching. Like there is a constant threat of sexual violence in these books. But what Emmy Chandler is doing here so the first one is called Guardian, and it's basically just like, it's just like a woman is sent to this, like, to this prison planet, and then she's like, pretty much given, like, she gets to choose her mate, like, mate. She gets to choose the man who she is with for 30 days, and that he has to, his job is to protect and feed and clothe her, and her job is, you know, to pleasure him, and he, of course, is very noble and heroic, and it all works out sort of fine at the end, although I want to talk about what fine means in the context of some of these books.
Yeah.
The second one, Hunter, is my favorite of them.
Me too. And it's the most dangerous game, basically, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, very rich people get to pay money to come down onto the prison planet and hunt killers, like, basically in an enclosed space. So it's like Hunger Games. Like, there's an enclosed space with lots of cameras and monitor, like, things that are monitoring you. And in that one, the heroine gets herself put into this enclosed space too.
Right.
And so the hero and heroine are both being hunted by the same man, and the heroine is a technological genius. So he is just pure brute physical strength.
Right.
And she is mental, like, she's just a genius. And so she saves the day in that book with her, like, intellect.
Right. And he keeps them safe when they're out, like, in the, like, the woods, essentially, right? I mean, so it's, like, together, they're this, like, unbeatable team, even against, like, all of the ways in which they're, like, right, like, the other hunter, right, has weapons, has technology, has cameras, can find them. There's mm-hmm. these really terrifying metal dogs, right, that essentially are just if they run into you, they're just going to, like, rip you to shreds. And it's really, but yeah, I mean, it's a classic, like, The Most Dangerous Game is a classic short story about a general who essentially creates his own island, right? And he's going to hunt the people who get shipwrecked on the island. And he sets up essentially a trap to shipwreck them. And have you read this? I feel like.
No, but I mean, I know the trope,
right? Yeah. And it has to be an island the same way this has to be a prison planet, right? You have to be isolated. And even if you can defeat the hunter, how are you going to escape is always like the meta question that's kind of underneath, right?
Yeah.
There's no real escape from any of it, even if you can beat this one guy.
No. And the third one, Champion, is Lady Gladiator. Like, she's sentenced to death, and she gets to choose the way she dies, and she chooses fighting as a gladiator on the prison planet, like, for TV. And she's the only woman who's ever done it. That's real Hunger Games-y. Like, she gets a makeover and she has sponsors. Like, if you loved the Hunger Games and you wish there had been sex in it and you are not scared and you are not, like, triggered by sexual violence in any way. Nobody in these books actually, like, gets raped.
But
it's a threat constantly.
Or it's happened in the past, right? I mean, in the second one, she's essentially been... Or no, is it?
I think she kills him before it happens.
Yeah, that's right. But she.
But it's. I mean, like, you should not. If that is triggering for you at all, you should not read these books. But that third one, Champion, and you can read these. You can read them standalone. They are not. You do not need to read them in order. But Champion is. If somebody said to me, like, I want Hunger Games but a romance, it's Champion.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then they go on from there. But there's something really interesting about these books, especially now, in that. Happily Ever After in these books can't really be happy.
Sure. Because the world is not righted. Yeah.
They're still on a prison planet. Right?
Right.
So it's a really odd. There's something very satisfying. They were incredibly satisfying for me as I was reading them. But I keep going back to, like, why is. Because we talk all the time. One of the big questions. I'm sorry. I know I'm talking a lot.
No, keep going.
One of the big questions we have a lot is in historical specifically is, like, why don't people write poor characters in historical romances? I mean, in contemporaries too, right? Like, and the answer has always been, well, because it's not like if you're poor, like, is it happily ever after? Like if you're literally worried about where your next meal is coming from.
Right, right.
Is it happily ever after? And these people are alone on a prison planet.
Here's what I think it's really about. I think it's like, and I think this is like the work, right? Like, we talk a lot about, like, partnership, right? Like, that's what a romance sort of delivers at the end, is these two individuals have become like a team, right? And now they're going to face whatever struggles sort of happen together. And I think that's why it ultimately works, because even though there's still danger in their future, and we know that, we also know that they have come through something where we trust that whatever their future, right, whatever this future conflict is going to be for them, that they are going to, like, tackle it together. And there's something really appealing about that, right? Like, and I don't necessarily, by the way, think that that's just a romance thing. I think that's like a friendship thing. I think a lot of these books have build like communities of people together, right? Like, I think going back to Ice Planet Barbarians, right? Like, they all start to work together. And so they're like, it's literally like watching a new society form, only it's one often where, like, gender differences are irrelevant or there's more equality. You know, people are essentially, like, literally making a new world for themselves. So I think that's why that's really appealing.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it feels like if they could triumph over these, like, really dark moments.
Yeah.
Like, if you can be a lady gladiator and, like, survive, then... what can't
you? You got this, right. Well, and often, I will also point out that almost always those external conflicts are human in nature, right? So it's like you got kidnapped and sent to the ice planet barbarians, right? Like this man, these men who like set up, these humans who set up the gladiator dome and you're in it or whatever. So they're beating humanity and then forming something new on this new planet.
Right.
So I think really profoundly, it's like this idea that we're starting over. We're going to do this better. We're not going to end up in 2019. We started there, but we don't have to end up there.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is that they're not all this kind of gendered.
Like, no, not
funkiness.
At all.
And that's where I want to go next, because I want to go to Robin Lovett's books. Robin Lovett is writing a series called Planet of Desire.
Yes.
The first one is called Toxic Desire. Fun fact, Sophie Jordan and Joanna Shoup both texted me about Toxic Desire within 18 hours of each other. And I don't think, and so you all have heard Joanna talk about Bananas books. You will hear Sophie next week to talk about The Master. But when they both recommend a book, I know it's going to be special.
Yeah.
So Planet of Desire is Robin Lovett's series where, again, it's futuristic. There's kind of an intergalactic space consortium. There's a big bad planet or like bad guys.
Like it's like the 10 planets consortium, right?
Yeah, it's like the EU of space.
And the thing that's really interesting before you launch into this is all of the, like, if you're working on one of the 10 planets, like ships, like they demand that you be like essentially gender neutral. But what that really means is that you are essentially disguising yourself if you're a woman to present more as a man.
Yep.
Right. And so what happens is they land on the sex planet. And the reason it's a sex planet is because there's something literally in the atmosphere, like the Dezedre or whatever.
Aphrodisiac. The atmosphere itself is an aphrodisiac.
And it's like you can't get away from it. Right.
You're going to die. If you don't have sex, you will die.
Yeah. Masturbating is not enough. It has to be like a mutual thing. Right.
Well, masturbating will help for a little bit.
But yeah,
like,
right.
Ultimately, you gotta have sex. And it doesn't matter. It can be any form of sex. Like, it's polyamory, queer sex, whatever kind of sex you want to have.
It does not have to be P&V.
It's about the emotional connection between the two, three, four, however many people.
Then what happens is there are eight. I mean, in the first one, it's like there's a, like, an enemy, right? Mm-hmm. So the alien, like, kind of male of the species who's there, like, hates the 10 planets people,
it's
right?
Enemies to lovers, yeah, because was he a prisoner on, like, the ship or something? Anyway, he has gold skin. and when anybody has sex with this type of creature, I mean, not creature, but this type of being in the world,
yeah,
they then turn gold.
I know, it's amazing.
It's so crazy.
That sex is going to make you golden. Everybody.
But that's a really good one, because it's like he was, this is, again, it's a classic old school romance trope. I was imprisoned by your people.
Yeah.
I hate you by virtue of you being those people.
And yet, here we are together.
We are forced together, and on, like, it's not only forced proximity, it's forced sexual proximity, because if we don't do it, we're going to die.
And the whole series then plays around with, like, a bunch of other things. And the second one, there's, like, essentially, like, a sex Olympics, of course.
Yeah, well, that also, again, we're back to, if you like the Hunger Games, Games read-alikes with Jen and Sarah.
And I think it's, like, really...
Hey, Scholastic!
We're like defiling your intellectual property.
Because that second one is like sex in an arena. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And not like gladiators. Like
performing. Yeah, right. Well, and a lot of it, it's like performative, it's in public, it's a voyeuristic. I mean, because then there's like
I really like the whole community, though.
Yeah, well, the essentially the people, the alien race that lives on this planet then has like developed a certain kind of culture based around this.
The need.
Yeah, right.
So, I will say this. If you liked the idea of Feverus in Dark Sky, this is the series for you. This is your next book after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I really love it because, like, it's so sex positive. Like, all the people are like, I don't understand why are you being so weird about sex. Like,
yeah. You know, when we as people on Earth, like, travel, I think, at least I would hope, most of us have this, like, basic understanding that, like, you know, it's not our place to, like, put our cultural mores onto that new place we're visiting, but to, like, sort of experience, like, really, like, what's going on here? To, like, eat the food of the place you're going, to try and speak the language, right? Like, we understand that is sort of, like, our responsibility when we choose to travel. But what if when we travel some other world, it really is, like, fundamentally seems, like, wrong with what you've either learned about who you are as a person or your culture and, like, its kind of rules and morality. And then it really becomes like, again, that conflict level really ramps up because now it's like person versus society, mm-hmm. right? And you're like, hey, this isn't how I'm supposed to act, but I have to do it in order to survive here. Mm-hmm. And that's like always those kinds of really strong internal conflicts which are like pressure from an external conflict. That's always like a real interesting. I like that. It's real meaty.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I think that that's done very well in the third book in the series, which is just now out. Is it just out?
Or we both just got it from NetGalley. Let me look.
Yeah. But in the third book in the series, the hero is a person from the home world. Like this is his world.
Yes.
And because of, by virtue of the requirement, the like sort of sex requirement all the time, sex to stay alive on this planet, right? The characters, the people who live on this planet, they don't really believe in love. They don't believe in like monogamy.
Monogamy.
I'm sorry, not love. They don't believe in monogamy. And so the concept of monogamy is incredibly foreign to them and problematic for them because they're like, well, wait a second, because what if something happens, right? Like, what if,
yeah,
you know, your mate has to leave you for a week? Like, you're going to die, right? Like, it's impossible. It's impossible to be monogamous and live on this planet, right?
And this dude has, like, a special gift.
He's like a shaman or something.
He's a sex god. He has to share it with the people.
Yeah. So he is like, so basically his whole thing is like, if you're sick on this planet, he has like special energy that he can like infuse in you, but he has to do it via sex. It's all real bananas, Robin. I mean, what is happening in your head? Anyway, P.S. I love you, Robin. I met you at BEA and you're amazing.
No, but you know, this is one though where instead of her just acclimating to his rules, he acclimates to sort of her culture, right? And she has this real concern about like, you know, it's complicated, of course, but every single one of the conflicts that happens is really about, again, like, who am I? Who do I want to be? Right? Should having a sexual relationship with someone make it so that they're my mate for life? I mean, essentially, is her drama because of her, you know, mm-hmm. she is not even entirely human. She's some other thing, too.
But I think for him, like, his conflict is really interesting, too, because he's like, if you're born into a destiny, is that your destiny? Mm-hmm. Like, do you have no other choice?
Yes.
Like, his whole conflict is, like, society versus self in a very concrete way. Like, if I do the thing that I want to do for myself, I have to turn my back on this, like, responsibility that I have towards my society. I mean, it is actually very Dark Sky. Like, this kind of,
Well, Robin is reading Dark Sky right now, so.
Oh, yeah. But, like, if Thronos didn't have such a stick up his ass about everything, it would be very Dark Sky. So, Yeah. I mean, so I really like this. I like it for another reason, too, that I just want to shout out. And this is not to say, look, I like most people in romance do not are not public about like their entire persona. Like I use a pseudonym, like we're, you know, I am Sarah in real life. But, you know, like we all like names are all changed and it's funky. But like a lot of these sex planet books or space books are written under like very private pseudonyms. I'm sure partially because there's something kind of salacious and scandalous about them at first glance. Right. Robin is very public. She's a public figure. She uses her actual photo. Like, and I'm not dissing anybody who doesn't do that, but like I just want to give an extra shout out to her for like being brave.
She's great. And I think that's like what it is too. It's, I think fundamentally, you know, I think sometimes like erotic romance gets like this really hard rap, like it's just porn. Obviously, no one listening to that us thinks that. We don't think that, but I do think books that really examine our sense of self in conjunction with our sexuality and what that means when they aren't necessarily like in alignment the way we want them to, that's worth us digging into as a genre. And I think that when you, a lot of the books that we've talked about so far already are really doing that in like a variety of really interesting ways. And so, yeah, they deserve some credit for like pushing against like a, I don't know, like a boundary that I think a lot of people don't really, it's harder to explore.
Yeah. I really want us to have, as a genre, I want romance. And I think this is something that places like RWA really need to sort. RWA has a lot to sort out. But someday when we get down the list from the like really critical things that impact people's actual real lives in the world, I want us to have a real conversation about erotic romance. And, like, what it means, why it's valuable, what the difference is between a sexy book and an erotic book, why we need those books, why we need to honor those books as themselves. And I think a lot of these books are doing that work.
Yeah, I think so, too. So I want to talk, though, because sci-fi, like space romances aren't always just like sex planet books. And there's like, all right, I was like, true and interesting. But there are a couple other ones that I thought that we could talk about. Because I like science fiction so much, maybe I've read more of them. And there's a couple that have come out like in the past year that I think are worth recently that are worth me like just mentioning. And then I want to talk about a couple that I just read that I really liked. So I want to talk about Polaris Rising by Jessie. What is it? Mihalik? I'm not sure how I'm saying her last name correctly.
I would say it, but we apologize.
Yeah. This is a, now I'm going to like be really honest with you. I think this is kind of romance light. There is a romantic arc, but I think the big arc is for our heroine, Ada von Heisenberg. And she is essentially, and this is like my catnip, right? So she is the princess, essentially, in the universe. There's like three really powerful like houses, and House von Heisenberg is one of them. And she's like the fifth of six children, and she has all these skills, but her real job is going to be to marry somebody for her house. So this is like all the aristocracy stuff, but like put in space. And a couple of years earlier, she got told she was going to have to marry somebody, and she was all like, fuck all y'all. And she like takes off. And so she's on this like space adventure, and she at the beginning of the book has been caught kind of accidentally. Like she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, and someone picked her up who didn't really even know what they had, and all of a sudden figures it out. And she gets put in a cell with a guy named Marcus Locke, who is essentially like the most wanted criminal in the galaxy. And
hey, Marcus.
Yeah.
Wait, I want to say this. He's known as the Devil of Fornax Zero.
Hello.
Which, I mean, everyone knows. If they're called the Devil, then you definitely are going to bone him.
Obviously.
I mean, that's destined to be.
That's just going to happen, right? And she is, and they pretty quickly figure out that they can, like, use each other to essentially escape this ship. And she promises, like, look, I'll pay you a ton of money if you get me out of here, or if you help me get out of here, because she's, like, crazy rich from, like, this, you know, crazy rich family. And they go on this, like, massive space adventure. And the reason I say it's romance light is there's a clear romantic arc, but I don't think it's, like, the A plot, right? Her being, I mean, you know, we talked about how, like, it's like Princess Leia if she didn't have to be, like, fucking dead-weighted with, like, Luke and everybody else, right? Like, she is just on her own adventure, and it's fucking great. And I loved it because I love, like, you know, she's got blasters and, like, implants, and she has to go do all this crazy.
Yeah, the cover, I know that, like, we always joke about covers not being important and, like, whatever, read the book, but this cover's badass.
And I'm going to tell you, I also just read, it does not come out till October 1st, so maybe this is bad form, but I just read the sequel, which is about Ada's sister, Bianca, and she gets tangled. She has been previously married, like, she went through the house marriage thing, and part of the reason Ada was so sure she didn't want to do it is she saw what happened to her older sisters. Now Bianca's husband is dead, she's back in the house, and there's a big romance between her and the head of house security.
A bodyguard romance.
Hello, exactly. And again, I feel like if you go into these books thinking there's going to be a romance, but it's going to be kind of secondary to this, like, space princess plot, mm-hmm. then you like me, will be very happy. And I love them because they're about competent women.
I love it.
Yeah.
So just to confirm, the series is how many books?
It's going to be three. Okay. The first one is Polaris Rising. It's out now.
And the
Aurora Blazing comes out second. Yeah.
And this, like, plot, this, like, the meat of the plot is over three books.
House. Yeah. And it's
all like Game of Thrones in space.
Yep. It sure is. Okay. It's house politics, right? So their house wants something from them. There's all this intrigue between them and the other mm-hmm. houses. There's all this competition, essentially. Okay. Yeah.
And each of the books is a standalone romance. It's just the overarching series is the plot.
Yeah. Okay. And you know what? I think that people will like that because also I do feel like it's more common in science fiction to have the same characters over books. Yeah. But I like that instead it's like the house, right? Like House von Heisenberg.
Well, it flips the script on, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes them more, it actually does make them more romancy because
yeah.
a romance reader, well, I mean, Jen, please, if you're recommending these, they have to, like, be complete romances at the end. You're not going to recommend them if at the end you're like, well, are these two ending
you're
up
gonna,
together?
You're going to get that HEA, but I would say, like, well, what I really liked about it is, I think number two worked for me because they work together more. In Polaris Rising, there's actually quite a few scenes where they, like, split up and we follow Ada, who, like,
sure.
does her own shit, saves him a bunch of times. That worked for me, too. But
yeah,
I think if you need them to be on page together all the time, it's not quite the same. But I really liked them a lot. And I feel like...
It sounds like Romancelandia really loves this book. It's on my desk because it's one of my next reads. I mean, it's on my desk with like eight other books, but... And I got a puppy this week. I don't know what I'm doing.
You're not reading space romances.
I'm also reading this book. I'm reading this puppy training book that's written by monks. I don't even know who I am.
That's real awkward, Sarah.
I know.
Real awkward.
I know.
Are we done?
I think so. You had a queer space romance you wanted to shout out.
Oh, I do have one I want to shout out. It's called A Treason of Truths by Ada Harper. And it is essentially also a bodyguard romance, except so the queen or the empress, her name's Sabine. So, of course, I was already really into liking her. And then her lover, although it's like real complicated at the beginning, you can't quite figure it out. Like her name's Lyre and she's this Lyre. Is that how you say it?
I love what? It. Yeah.
I'm yeah. In. And her job essentially is like she's the spy master for the empress. But the scene opens with, like, the empress doing some, like, the book opens with her, like, doing some negotiating. And you definitely at first are like, wait, is this like, unrequited love, right? That, like, Lyra's just super into Sabine. But then, like, they get back together and there's, like, you could tell everybody thinks they're already lovers. It's, so it's, like, really, it's kind of hidden. But there's this great line at the beginning, and I was all in, where Sabine is, like, says something to someone and Lyra thinks, when she says thank you, she can make it sound like fuck you. And I was like, that's my kind of character right there. So that one is one that I actually have not finished yet, but I've started once I knew we were doing this, and I've been really enjoying it, but I will admit I'm not there yet. I'm not done yet. So.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad that we shouted it out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Tell us your favorite space romance, because we want to read more of them. I downloaded Warriors Woman like a lunatic earlier, so I'm ready. I've got my, I mean, who am I kidding? I'm not reading this monk book. But we are very excited. Where I'm always jazzed when we can talk about a subgenre of romance that feels new, feels fresh. Like there are only so many like wallflower rakes that, you know, I mean, I love a wallflower rake, God knows, but like this is
there
cool.
Are no wallflowers in space, Sarah. None. And maybe that's why so. I like it.
I don't think so. But this is really fun, and I hope you guys, it's summer. It's time for space romances.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, hello.
If there were ever a time for a space romance, it's summer.
Now, before we go, you wanted to try something new at the end of every episode.
Oh my gosh. I wasn't ready to do it today. But
Do you want me to start?
You start, yeah, and I've got a thing that I've got a thing to talk about.
So it's just like sharing something fun that we had happened to us or that we did? Is that what it is?
Like, I don't know. No, I'm thinking that it should be like a, like, is there a book that you just recently read that you think is great?
Ooh,
or
okay.
Like a rec.
All right.
Either like a book or a movie or show or a thing.
Oh, okay. So I have been watching Chernobyl on HBO to no one's surprise because everyone knows I love like a nuclear story. But you know what's been really cool? I know.
That's
I don't
so
know
obscure and weird. Oh my God. Have you read Alyssa Cole's Mixed Signals?
Yeah. But wait, you didn't know that about me? You didn't
I
know
did.
That
I like knew that you I vaguely, but like I didn't know that it was like, you know, a thing you put in your bio.
Send
me
Sarah.
Your nuclear romances.
Okay, I actually, there are a few nuclear romances and I have not read them.
Well, that Mixed Signals one, isn't it? Oh no, there was sun. There's something
yeah,
about sun. All right, doesn't
listen,
matter.
Listen, I read nonfiction nuclear books. I've read many, many books about Chernobyl. I know that's real fucking crazy, but I love it.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, so I've read, actually, I'll take a picture. I put it on Twitter. You just don't follow me closely enough. I have a whole nuclear shelf. Anyway.
I'm a puppy now. I can't be here's on Twitter.
Okay, here's what's really cool about, if you've watched the show, they also have a podcast that goes along with it.
Ooh.
And what's really cool about the podcast is it's the guy from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which I was on one then once. I was on that once and won. But
you were on what?
Wait, what? I'll tell you that in a minute. Wait. And he's interviewing the writer. And what they do is they kind of go through the episode and talk about what parts are true and where they came from and which parts he essentially wrote in. So it's a really cool way of experiencing the show. Like, kind of like if you ever have that question where you're watching something that's based on real events, you're like, which part's real, which parts aren't? The podcast is so fun to listen to as you watch, because then, or after you watch, because then you're like, oh, like that's a composite character. Or, oh, that dialogue actually came straight from voices from Chernobyl. So I really recommend the podcast and the show.
Cool.
Yeah.
You
can recommend puppy books, I guess.
Nope. I really love the movies, but I don't go to them enough. And that is a thing that is real. But I went to see Booksmart last week.
Oh, I want to see that.
My lovely friend Megan Frampton. And
nice.
Megan and I live, you know, 5 or 6 blocks from each other. And in between our houses, this is what's so great about living in a city, is a movie theater. So we met in the middle and we went to see Booksmart, which is, I said to my husband, like, it is the greatest, like, last night of high school movie I've ever seen. That's so it's basically like if you loved all those like high school coming of age movies, this movie is about the very last night of high school. Like
awesome.
The day before, tomorrow morning is graduation. And the heroine is the valedictorian who and her best friend, who is the salutatorian. Is that how you say that? Salutatorian?
Yes.
I think so. And they are like adorable workaholic. Well, the valedictorian is an adorable workaholic nerd. And sure. The salutatorian is like mega feminist like nerd. And they've done nothing but like be each other's friends and study to get into like the best possible colleges and to do like their amazing things after high school. And then on the last day of school, she discovers that like all the kids who she thinks like, well, they've just like slacked off and like not done anything. And they're all going to like, you know, nowhere colleges and she's going to end up being their boss. It turns out like they're all going to like Yale and Princeton and Stanford and like big colleges. And she realizes in the very beginning of this movie, like she's ruined, like she's basically like missed out on high school because she was so panicked about the rest of her life. So they have one night to rectify it.
Oh.
And it's like a buddy movie and it has all the beats. There's a little bit of a romance in it. It has all the beats that you love in these movies, if you love these movies, which I do, and I just highly, highly recommend it. It's written by a woman, produced, like, it's got a giant female, lots and lots of women working on it, the crew, and it's written by Olivia Wilde, who's, you know, beautiful awesome. And talented. Jason Sudeikis is in it.
That sounds so good.
So is Lisa Kudrow.
Well, it's summertime. It's time for me to get my movie on, so I'm here for it.
Yeah. If you like a high school movie, but you teach high school, well, you teach junior high.
I don't. I teach middle school, but you know, my son is in high school, and I am always telling him, like, just enjoy high school. Like, stop fucking falling for this crazy idea that your life only matters.
I want you to watch it. Well, you should. I want you to watch it with him and then tell me what he thinks.
I will report back to you.
Yeah. I want to know what real kids on the street feel. But I really loved it.
Kids on the street are still in bed at 11:30 in the morning. Fine.
Man, that's a great life.
It seriously is.
It really is. I would be in bed if I didn't have, you know, kids and a dog and a husband.
Self-inflicted. That's
I know. I know. All right, my loves.
All right.
This was Fated Mates. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and subscribe in your favorite podcasting app. Find us on Twitter at Fated Mates. Find us on Instagram at Fated Mates Pod. Check out the show notes because Jen is amazing and does beautiful show notes. There will be cover images this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just a quick reminder, everybody, that the moon and Mars are two different places. Have fun in space.
Well, masturbating will help for a little bit, but like ultimately, you gotta have sex.
It does not have to be P and V.
Okay.
Ah!
Waiter, all have what she's having, only less pepper.